Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly news magazine produced by your community radio station and many others across the country. I'm Debbie Linehart from KRFC in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Our main message now is, where are the good Americans when all of this is happening here in our own country?
We can expect the system to hit back at us and hit back really, really hard. We have to have a plan for when that happens.
It's a sad day for free speech when, in a so-called democracy, has to use force to silence the opposition who say we need a license to express free speech in the invisible airwaves.
Today on Sprouts, we follow up on three stories of civil disobedience.
Here are our weapons of mass destruction, America. And we are saying, not in our names. We are standing here to say we are no longer complicit. And that's where the hope comes from. That's where the hope comes from, is that hundreds of people will be doing that.
2 years ago, three Catholic nuns used bolt cutters to break into a chain-link fence around a Minuteman III missile silo near Greeley in northern Colorado. Aubrey Fennewald reports.
The nuns staged a nonviolent symbolic action to alert people to just one location of weapons of mass destruction as the U.S. prepared to wage war on Iraq. They chose the date of October 6th in memory of the thousands of innocent civilians lost in the bombing of Afghanistan 1 year before in 2001. For their civil act of resistance, the nuns were arrested, have stood trial, were sentenced with obstruction of national defense and destruction of government property, and are now serving the next 2 to 3 years in federal prison. The eldest of the trio, Sister Jackie Hudson, age 68, has been a peace activist for decades. She is a member of the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action in her home state of Washington. Prior to entering the Dominican Order 50 years ago, she was a teacher and activist in Michigan. Sister Hudson, along with Sister Platty and Sister Gilbert, helped form the Sacred Earth and Plowshares movement. Sister Hudson describes their action at the missile site.
On October 6th of 2002, the three of us arrived at the Minuteman III missile silo site called November 8, or N8 by the military, and we had discovered this site through reading Nuclear Heartland. It's a book written describing the exact positioning of all 49 Minuteman missile sites in the state of Colorado, as well as those in the states of Wyoming, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. And we came to Colorado specifically because the military here in this state refer to themselves as the kill chain. And we chose the particular N8 missile silo because it was high on a hill, visible from a great distance, both east and west, north and south. And we wanted this because we never do things in secrecy. So we arrived about 7:30 in the morning, and we clipped one link of a chain which allowed us to open this gate wide. This was the outer gate. And then we processed inward to the second major gate, which was directly around the missile silo itself. We again clipped one link of this chain and opened the gates wide. We clipped the one link in each of these chains, leaving the locks intact. We proceeded then from that to the actual missile silo. And the silo cover is 110 tons of concrete. And on that silo cover, we took our blood from baby bottles and poured our blood in the form of a cross. And then we proceeded down to the lower side of it, the vertical side of the missile silo, and put two more crosses on those sides. And then also on the railroad tracks that are used to bring the silo cover back for maintenance. So after doing that, then we processed over to the actual fencing around the missile silo, and we cut carefully up the edges by the vertical poles, and we laid three sections of that fencing in a total unit down to say, welcome world, come. Here we have a weapon of mass destruction. We are in Iraq right now searching. Our government is looking to find the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. We're saying, hey, we're here in the United States where we already have 10,455 of these nuclear weapons. We found one, and we're here to symbolically disarm it. Come join us. Come see this site. So after, while we're doing this cutting of the three sections, we noticed the first military vehicle coming down from the highway. In plowshare actions, we use two symbols. One is the household hammer, and one is the blood. After pouring the blood in the form of crosses, we hammered on this 110 tons of concrete. It's like taking a hammer, household hammer, to the sidewalk. So there was no damage whatsoever. And also the symbolic hammering on the railroad tracks. Again, the symbolism of the Holocaust and what we would have hoped we would have done in the case of stopping the trains taking so many victims to the death camps in Germany. So we say so often, you know, where were the good Germans? And we know now there were many. But our main message now is, where are the good Americans when all of this is happening here in our own country? So we opened this gate. Our goal was to inspect, expose, and symbolically disarm at least one of these U.S. nuclear weapons. And so with this action, we then, seeing the military vehicles approaching, went back onto the silo cover, and we had brought with us a prepared liturgy of prayer and song. And so we began our liturgy and particular prayers that we had felt were meaningful for this particular action. And in the meantime, a second military vehicle came, and so they got out of the vehicle around the side of us and laid down on the ground with their M16s facing us or pointed at us, and over a berm of sand or soil. And they shouted back to the other vehicle, "They're singing Christian songs." So they knew who we were.
On Saturday, October 2nd, over 200 people visited nuclear missile silos in solidarity with the three nuns in prison. Groups from churches, schools, and peace and justice organizations, along with musicians, artists, and families, formed citizen weapon inspection teams. Teams visited 38 of the 49 missile silos in northeastern Colorado. 25 people from the Poudre Valley Citizen Weapon Inspectors met at the Super Walmart in Fort Collins for the trip out to Missile Silo N11. Most of the group traveled in a bus sponsored by the Colorado Communities for Justice and Peace, driven by Rich Andres.
It's a large school bus, used to be, and it's been converted to an RV inside. And on the outside, it's got a colorful dragon design on it. And on the side, it says, "Vote for a Change."
20 miles from the silo site, a Weld County Sheriff's car joined the Dragon bus and five other cars. The convoy reached the silo site about 65 miles east of Fort Collins on the gently rolling hills of Shortgrass Prairie to find the gate by the road closed but not locked.
We're trying to figure out if we're going to be able to go inside the first gate. Last year we could.
So it isn't locked.
He's asking.
After discussing the situation with the sheriff's officer, the group decided to stay outside the gate for a legal action. Progressive Magazine editor Matt Rothschild was in Colorado and came on the trip because he had never seen a missile silo before.
It's quite an ominous thing to be here with these weapons that could destroy the world. Still on hair trigger alert, actually. The United States and Russia still have a couple thousand weapons like these that could be launched within 15 minutes. There's a brown sign with a big N and a dash, and then number 11. It's a long rectangle fenced in with barbed wire fence, and then we're at a perimeter fence here. The missile silo itself just looks like there's a couple of concrete lids, and then there's some vertical little Washington Monument type thing that may be 20 feet high, but the lids of the silos are very nondescript.
Colorful kites joined the military helicopter patrolling the missile field while the radical cheerleaders performed.
N-U-K-E, ain't no place for you to be. N-U-K-E, Bush is on a killing spree. And no more bombs, you shake your palms. K can't see function, E accept destruction. N-U-K-E, ain't no place for you to be.
That was our first one. Yay!
Following their inspections, the citizen inspection teams gathered at the University of Northern Colorado. The convergence featured speakers, skits, and music to illustrate the status of nuclear weapons in the United States and the cost of maintaining a nuclear weapons program, and to offer other approaches for achieving national security, as expressed by Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin.
We need to send a message loud and clear to the rest of the world that we do not sanction preemptive wars, that we do not sanction killing innocent people in the name of saving the lives of our innocent people, and that we understand that it is much, much better for us to be loved in the world than to be feared, that if we care about our own security, it means we must show that we care about the lives of other people. And it's that compassion and that kindness and that love that we have to spread to the rest of the world if we want to be safe at home.
The afternoon ended with some participatory theater to a song from George Mann and Julius Margolin.
So I want y'all to pick up a missile and lay it down, and then we're going to put some flags over it and some peace signs over it and anything else you want to do to cover that puppy up. So please join us.
I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside and study war no more.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots. On today's program, we follow up on three acts of civil disobedience.
As soon as any movement starts to get effective, that's what we see. We see a ratcheting up of these sorts of police state tactics, and we need to be prepared for them, and we need to use them to grow, and that's what we're trying to do with this.
San Francisco is known for being a haven for political expression, but that changed with the Reclaim the Commons mobilization in June. Reclaim the Commons was a response to the biotechnology conference in San Francisco and the G8 meeting off the coast of Georgia. Meadow Bolger works with the Green Bloc and is part of the Adopt an Activist Collective.
Our response to them meeting wasn't simply to say no to biotechnology, no to corporate control and patents on life, on human DNA, no to the genetic drift of uncontrolled mutated experiments in the corporate agribiz field, but to say yes to all the solutions that already exist to the problems that we're facing that stem from corporate control. We were saying yes to organic foods, yes to family farms, yes to community gardens, yes to sustainable transportation, yes to racial justice, and drawing these links between the larger movement for peace, justice, and sustainability and the biotechnology industry.
The Reclaim the Commons mobilization started with several permitted actions, including a really, really free market on Sunday, followed by a day of social justice actions. Tuesday, June 8th, was the beginning of the G8 summit.
That was our day to disrupt the biotechnology conference that was going on, and we did a street blockade with the help of some organic plants. And so in that particular action, we were both taking over public space, causing a disruption to these people that we feel were having an illegitimate meeting. And right there in the streets, we had our solutions with us. We had these organic plants that are the way that we can feed the world, the way that we can treat ourselves to becoming healthier. And we were also there as, you know, people power is also, you know, one larger aspect of the solutions that we need to start embracing. And so for that, we had about 35 people arrested in that occupation.
Meadow Bolger says that the police cited and released the activists as part of the standard process of risking arrest to make a political statement. But the thing that has changed is the way the district attorney has prosecuted the case.
The thing that we're charged with is disturbing the peace and blocking traffic, roughly speaking. And the allegation is very flimsy because the police had already blocked all the traffic in that area. The people that were there were people that were part of the convention or part of the demonstrations. there weren't pedestrians that were caught up in this unawares. So it's a very flimsy case. The standard operating procedure in the city of San Francisco for the last decade or so has been to hold the cases for a while and then eventually drop them so as to not tie up the court resources with political trials. And what we've seen in this is that the district attorney, for whatever her own reasons are, I can only speculate, is deciding to try to make some hay out of this politically. And we're seeing that the charges aren't being dropped. They're being prosecuted fairly seriously, and we're facing up to a $1,000 fine and a year in prison for taking the stand against a corporate issue that's absolutely a sleeper issue, but it's storming the nation in a fairly literal sense. You know, we're surrounded by genetically engineered corn, canola, and cotton and soy products that the people aren't being told about. And, you know, if that's not a time to stand up for our rights as consumers and as citizens, I don't know what is.
Bolger says he expects people will plan more for post-arrest strategy in San Francisco.
In the past, in San Francisco, people could go into an arrest situation assuming that they could contact the, a decent lawyer and that the charges would be dropped or that probation would be given and it wouldn't really be any big deal. And it's going to take a higher level of organizing to make that the case now. In my opinion, that's a good thing.
You're listening to Sprouts. In today's show, we follow up on three acts of civil disobedience.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
The world is collapsing around our ears. I turned up the radio, but I can't hear it. When I got to the house and I called.
Anybody with a little bit of money could get together and have a voice on the airwaves. And we could do it in a way that doesn't interfere with existing licensed frequencies. I don't understand why the federal government has such a big beef with that. We're not causing any harm. We're just people that have a different perspective on the world, and we want to share those opinions with our friends and neighbors.
Free Radio Santa Cruz has been broadcasting as an unlicensed radio station in an act of electronic civil disobedience for nearly 10 years. Benny Lombardo produced this profile of the station for Sprouts in April.
Free radio, chaos radio collective, whatever you want to call it. We now have the technology. The airwaves really belong to us. It's up to the people to take back that which U.S. corporate interests and government regulators monopolize. Stop for-profit brainwashing. Build revolt by networking nationally and internationally. It's up to you, folks. We need a core group and many more to broadcast and program Free Radio Santa Cruz.
It started as more of an informational thing to counter the corporate news that we had here in town.
Skidmark Bob is one of two founding members still active with Free Radio Santa Cruz after 9 years. In 1995, he organized with the IWW Labor Union and also volunteered with Food Not Bombs. Bob earned a living busking on the streets of Santa Cruz with his music partner, Phil Free. As he explains here, Free Radio Santa Cruz was born out of a need for local activists to dispute claims made in the local newspaper.
We heard about Free Radio Berkeley. That was easy as medium, and it cost us, like, all together, this is for brand new equipment and a transmitter, $1,000.
When the idea came up to start a radio station, Phil Free jumped at the chance.
I tried to help fix the first two transmitters that we had. Would have had us up a year, perhaps 2 years earlier.
Phil explains that growing up, he was a radio enthusiast and experimented with many different receivers. He eventually became a ham radio operator, and his technical abilities were a big asset to the would-be pirates.
I knew how to do certain things that they needed, and it was a perfect place to utilize skills that had only been a hobby.
Old Lady Scararms has been hosting a weekly program on world affairs since 1999. She's one of many DJs who say the station's structure is what they appreciate.
We make decisions through consensus, and we're not a hierarchical organization, and we're a radio station that's completely volunteer. We get no funding whatsoever.
Uncle Dennis, who began doing Earth First Radio News in 1997, agrees.
social justice and getting news and information out to people is the most important thing, not making money. Here at Free Radio, the emphasis is not on professionalism, it's on the truth, and it's about free speech.
Uncle Dennis says that independent media is crucial to any social justice organizing.
If people are given the facts, if people know what's going on, if people understand the paradigm that they're living in, that they'll want to change it.
A lot of different activist groups use it.
Again, Skidmark Bob.
Usually it's people from those activist groups that get shows that bring something to it. Like they'll have some folks from the Needle Exchange did a show, talked about staying safe and cleaning your needles.
Robert Norse is a longtime activist who has been an outspoken supporter of the homeless. He began broadcasting his program, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, in 1995, shortly after Free Radio Santa Cruz first came on the air.
At that time, I was publishing the Street Sheet, which is a homeless newsletter about underreported issues around civil rights for poor people in Santa Cruz, specifically homeless people. A lot of my concern was getting out to the community voices that you can't hear otherwise.
When asked how Free Radio Santa Cruz stands apart from other community stations, Old Lady Scararms cites a broadcast on March 20th, 2003, when the U.S. invaded Iraq.
People were able to call in and express their feelings. If you tune into most other stations, you wouldn't hear live programming where people were able to just spontaneously call in and say how they felt.
Reckless, who let the station set up in her garage in 1997, describes the sense of empowerment she experienced on the air.
Free radio really changed my life. It gave me a feeling that I wasn't really helpless because through that media, we were able to have our voices be heard and have a little bit more control in what was going on in our city.
In 1999, Reckless left Santa Cruz for Austin, Texas, and started Free Radio Austin, which was violently shut down by the FCC in November 2000.
The radio station at this location is operating without authorization.
While Free Radio Santa Cruz has experienced at least a half dozen such visits from the FCC in its history, the agency has thus far been unable to shut the station down. No matter is the attitude of most at Freak Radio.
Even if the FCC ended up busting us, which obviously I hope doesn't happen, I know that people would bounce back and that we would get, you know, more equipment and go back on the air.
At this point, the station's future rests on the hope that it can find a new location before a 60-day notice runs out on the current space in May. Again, Skidmark Bob.
It's changing all the time, and we're always having to change with it in a way and see what we want to do with it.
Phil Free marvels at how his involvement with the station has influenced his personality.
I lived with Free Radio. You know, it changed households, families, comrades and friends, brought together, torn apart. It's a long voyage, this Free Radio thing. It's changed me completely, yeah.
To learn more about Free Radio Santa Cruz, a.k.a. Freak Radio, or to listen live, visit freakradio.org. For Sprouts, this is Vinny Lombardo.
Free Radio Santa Cruz did find a new location, but on Wednesday, September 29th, U.S. Marshals and the FCC took the station off the air. Skidmark Bob reports.
First of all, I got the actual broadcast itself as it was taking off the air midstream in the middle of alternative radio, which was airing Howard Zinn. Talking, and then they took that off the air. So we're going to start with that little bite.
Propose a resolution that the historian should speak out against the war in Vietnam. Well, there's kind of shock. We're historians. We're supposed to be here to...
I was on scene at the residence where the station was located. The FCC didn't show up till after 10 to 15 U.S. Marshals with SWAT team gear, assault weapons, helmets, raided the house where mostly students live. It's a co-op house in the Santa Cruz area. Raided the whole house, secured the premises, and then five FCC shows up. There was approximately about 150 people showed up to protest the FCC and what they were doing. And the U.S. Marshals had to form a line out front for a little while, keeping people from getting onto the property. This is one of the supporters that was holding a sign.
What do you think about what's going on?
I am so bummed, man. I am so bummed. This is really bad. I can't believe that they would waste their time and money on this. This is so sad. And all the information that's so important to us that we need to hear It's just, I am so bummed.
Do you listen to free radio?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I appreciate it so much. I'm so supportive of it, and this is, like, so sad. I hold this sign to let people know that this is happening. It says, watch the FCC bus free radio. We're such a threat. And it's and there's all these criminals that could be, like, breaking into people's homes, stealing things. Oh, what are they going to do? They're going to come and bother us. What a waste.
U.S. Marshals aren't used to busting pirate stations. They're used to counterfeiters and transporting prisoners and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's a little something a little more understandable as far as protecting ourselves or something, but we're not doing anything to hurt. We're doing actually more help, and they should be supporting us. They should be backing us up, maybe financially even, because we do something that other radio stations don't do, and that's waste the air with a bunch of stupid music and rhetoric compared to what we say.
All right, that was one of the FRSC Free Radio Santa Cruz supporters that showed up to rally and protest against the FCC and U.S. Marshals shutting down Free Radio Santa Cruz on September 29th, 2004.
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, unlicensed, unregulated, under siege.
Vinny Lombardo says the support from the grassroots radio community has been overwhelming.
We are a small staff of volunteers, and it's been just, it's taken me alone 4 days to reply to all just the emails that have come in, and I'm still bogged down with a couple dozen that I still have to reply to. So, It's been amazing. I mean, we've had support coming in from all elements of the grassroots radio community, and it just makes us feel great because it feels like what the work that we're doing is valued and is valid at the same time and important to people, not just here in Santa Cruz, but all across the country.
So what's next for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Well, at the moment, on Wednesday, we got raided by the FCC. They confiscated all of our equipment. And so we were left with nothing. We did have a few things in storage, so we quickly, it took about a day to quickly assemble a makeshift studio, sort of a mock-up of our old studio. And we're streaming online at the moment at www.freakradio.org. There's, I believe we have a capacity for 20 listeners. There is some movement in the community to try to restore the FM broadcast, although that's taken a little longer than we had anticipated due to some logistical concerns. I don't want to get into too much specifics about some of our tactics, but Free Radio Santa Cruz will live on. To what extent some of the individuals that are currently involved will be in the future, that remains to be seen. But Free Radio Santa Cruz is an institution in this community, and if the FCC wants to try to take a couple of us to court, that will not stop the rest of the community from organizing for this important mission.
If you would like to help Free Radio Santa Cruz, visit their website at www.freakradio.org. That's it for this week's Sprouts. Our contributors included Vinnie Lombardo and Skidmark Bob from FRSC in Santa Cruz, California, and Aubrey Fennewald from KRFC in Fort Collins, Colorado. Our collaboration coordinator is Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks to the Pacifica Foundation and the High Country Community Radio Coalition for distribution assistance. I'm your host and producer, Debbie Linehart from KRFC in Fort Collins, Colorado. Tune in to next week's Sprouts, and until then, check us out on the web at www.sproutsradio.org.